Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
I think we're less than 60 days until opening day of Major League Baseball, which makes it a perfect time to head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, where we talk to our friend Jacob Calvin Meyer, who covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. And Jacob, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. I'll start with David Rubenstein. And it was, what, late March, early April opening day, where he was talking about how he didn't want this to be the high water mark. He wanted to talk about a World Series, all that. And now he was recently in Switzerland wanting a salary cap. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, two things can be true at the same time. David Rubenstein has said he wants to speed up the effort to win a World Series, and maybe he's not going at the speed that Orioles fans want him to, but I think that that's true. At the same time, billionaires tend to operate in their own self-interest, and a salary cap in Major League Baseball is solely in the billionaire's best interest and not in the players. So I think those two things can be true at the same time.
Dylan Carlson brought into the fold. It feels like we're at that stage where they're kind of just, you know, shopping out some guys on the fringes, and this is where it's at. I know they made a trade last year this time of year, but we're not hearing much. Those teams don't seem to be super motivated sellers. Like, I don't think they want to give Dylan Cease away. So do you think this kind of is what it is for now?
Yeah, my guess is that this is what it is. It seems like Dylan Carlson, if he's on the 26-man roster, which I'm not sure he will be, but if he is, he might be operating in a sort of Aaron Hicks-esque role, probably a little bit reduced, but a switch hitter, better against lefties. So that makes some sense to kind of fill out the 40-man roster. Perhaps if Jorge Mateo isn't ready for opening day, or if they go in another direction with him, maybe Carlson makes the roster. But when it comes to a trade and whether that's going to happen, I think it might depend more, honestly, on the sellers than on the buyers. Like, how aggressive are the Padres going to be before the season to trade some guys? Is their ownership situation, does that push them to make these trades, or does it push them to hold off until the deadline, see what the first half of the season looks like for them? I think Ken Rosenthal today reported that Michael King might be on the market. That's another guy that would make a lot of sense for the Orioles in addition to a lot of other teams, considering how great Michael King is. So the Padres make a lot of sense as a trade partner. The Mariners would as well, of course. We talk about that every yes. every day, and it just doesn't happen. So my guess is that if I had to put money on something, I would say that this is that this is it, and there's not going to be a big trade before before spring training.
Jacob, we haven't talked to you in a little bit, but Anthony Santander signing with the Blue Jays, a ton of that money is deferred. You have the opt-out. You have the club option. Are you surprised that the Orioles didn't jump in and try to break that fall?
No. Okay. So in from a 30,000-foot view, like if you would say, oh, Anthony Santander gets a contract that's worth $13.5 million per year in present-day value, would I expect the Orioles to have been more competitive there? Yes. But the way I look at it, at least, is that the present-day value calculations, they matter for the team and they matter for the luxury tax. But to the player, the total number of dollars still matters, right? Anthony Santander is still going to get $92 million from that deal, even though it's going to come over a longer stretch of time. You know, when he's retired, it's not like he's going to be making a crazy amount of money. So when those checks come in, they're going to feel pretty nice. And so, you know, these deferrals are in some ways really good for players. And that's why they are taking those deals. It's something that maybe allows them to get a little bit more money than they would otherwise in a straight deal. And so if you would have told me before the off season began that Santander would get $92 million, I would have said that the Orioles would not give him that much money. And the fact that the deal was a little weird and included some other factors is probably just something that helped Santander and the Blue Jays ink the deal instead of making it, oh, should the Orioles have gotten involved at that number?
We're talking with Jacob Calvin-Meyer. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Jacob, I'm going to ask you a question that we posed just the three of us earlier and curious your answer. So if I gave you Jackson Holliday, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kerstedt, and Cade Povich, who are you most confident is going to make an impact this season of those
four? Like right now, like opening day, season started tomorrow. Who's most ready to cook?
Yeah, I'll put my money on Jackson Holliday. I think if you're going to ask me who's most likely to have a 750 OPS of those three hitters, it's Heston Kerstedt easily, especially considering that's basically his career OPS as is.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other concerns about Kerstedt as a player, his defense. He has had trouble staying healthy at times in his career. I know last year was more of a fluke than anything. And then the playing time is a big question for him. And then Mayo's probably not even going to be on the opening day roster. And then what his path to consistent playing time is, you know, a little bit tenuous at this moment. But I think Jackson Holliday showed, I think most people, Orioles fans otherwise, would be best if they just ignore Jackson Holliday's first stint in the major leagues. I find it almost irrelevant that he went, whatever it was, 2-for-36 or with 18 Ks or whatever it was. If you look at from July on, it was a pretty solid first taste of the big leagues for a 20-year-old. He showed some really high highs. He struggled at moments and then got out of it. He made a late season swing change that I think is going to be great for him. He got better defensively as the year went on. I would expect that at the beginning of the season, Jackson Holliday, I think the best case for Holliday is at the beginning of the year, he's maybe a league average player. And then by the end of it, you really start to see him ascend. He becomes a plus second baseman. He becomes a guy that's walking more. He's maybe has that gap-to-gap power, is hitting triples, right, instead of trying to go for the home run ball. I would definitely say Jackson Holliday of those four players.
One of the things that we, and I think you were with us on this, bemoaned last year was there seemed to be a bit of a leadership void. And one person who did get a lot of accolades for sort of unifying the clubhouse and Latin guys and English speakers and non-English speakers, what was Anthony Santander. And this team went into quite a second half tailspin. And I don't know who the bad cops were. Like, they never pulled out of it. And a lot of their young leaders struggled. And now I look at it and they brought in a part-time platoon outfielder and a really bad defensive backup catcher. And I'm like, And you brought in some experienced pitchers, one who's never pitched in the big leagues, and I don't think he speaks English, and another one who's 41 years old and pitches every 5 days. Like, am I crazy, or no. did they actually go even more? We got it all figured out with their kids. Don't worry about it. Intangibles don't matter. Leadership doesn't matter.
No, you're definitely not crazy to at least have it as a question in your mind or wonder what that's going to look like. Are people going to step up? You know, in a span of 6 months, this organization lost Austin Hayes, James McCann, and Anthony Santander, who you would have probably put in three of their top five leaders to start last season. And so I'm not the type of person that personally makes the one-to-one connection of they struggled in the second half, therefore there was a leadership problem, right? I don't make that connection. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just don't necessarily make it. That doesn't mean that leadership doesn't matter and that the intangibles don't matter. Maybe, right? This might be Cope on the team side, but maybe they're looking at this and saying, hey, maybe getting rid of a couple of leaders does lead some of the young guys who aren't that young anymore to step up and become leaders. Maybe after a while of having all of these veterans that you're relying on to be leaders, maybe it stunts the growth of your young players. And Jordan Westbrook, there's nothing stopping Jordan Westbrook from being the leader of this team.
Yep,
right?
I agree with that.
But except last year, what was stopping him was the fact that there were already leaders on the team. And so I'm not saying I wouldn't say that leadership is a concern, but it's definitely a question that's going to be asked in spring training. It's definitely something that we're going to keep our eye on. And if the first half of 25 looks like the second half of 24, you're going to start hearing that talk even more.
No, hey there, we got a new listener.
Yes, we have the baby.
Jacob, you mentioned Kobe Mayo earlier in the segment and how you think that he, as things currently stand, will start the year at AAA. I think we're all in agreement there. But how do you expect the Orioles to handle Kobe Mayo when they get to Sarasota? Are they still going to toy with the third base experiment? Is it just going to be first base? Could we see him some in right field?
I don't think right field's going to happen. My guess is it's going to be pretty close to 50-50 third base and first base. And going into the season, Kobe Mayo is going to be the next man up if any of the seven infielders get hurt, because he has the ability to play both corners, and the team does have some pretty solid depth middle infield-wise. And so that's my expectation for Mayo. I think the talking point will be that he has the ability to go out and win a job in spring training. Is that true? I don't know, right? We heard that with Jackson Holliday last spring. The kid did everything he, you know, could have possibly done and then didn't make the team. And so, but I think they're going to tell Kobe Mayo, I think they're going to say publicly that he has a chance to make the team. And then they'll see if there's any injuries that pop up. They'll see how Jorge Mateo's health is. They'll see what their roster composition looks like. And you know, maybe something changes with somebody like Arias or with Mateo. But the most likely opportunity for Kobe Mayo to get playing time is somebody ahead of him getting hurt, or he has a great first 6 weeks in Norfolk, and then one of the guys on the big league roster is struggling, and they make a switch. At that point.
That would be interesting, though, because that's the same Kobe Mayo that they tried to sell their fans last year. That Kobe Mayo, and we don't need to do anything at the deadline big, because Kobe Mayo and Kobe Mayo and Jackson Holliday are going to be a big part of our second half. So there would be a certain irony in that the following year he starts back in Norfolk. And I'm with you. I think he's absolutely going there unless there's a bunch of injuries. But I just felt compelled to bring that up.
My expectation for Mayo is it's a disappointing condiment. Is that I'm a mustard guy. But anyway, Jacob Kalvenmeier, you're the best, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, brother.
Coming up next, we get back to the Terps. And how good are they? What are they capable of now? Have we changed our opinions about Maryland basketball? We discuss next here on The Fan.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Everybody's working really hard there. They've been in every game. Yeah, once in a while they slip up. But they're not getting blown out. They could have won Oregon. They could have won Purdue. Hey, Marquette. Yeah. I mean, it was a missed free throw, and it was nobody's fault.
Western.
And number one goes, I mean, the point guard for Marquette, nobody knew how good he was. They did after that game.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knew. And so anyways, I'm just like, last night just brought it back to like, this is how good we can be. This is why we can go. That's why Sunshine said they can go to the Sweet 16.
Yes. I agree with everything Jimmy Sunshine Patso said there, except everybody knew Cam Jones was good going into that game. But alas.
Sunshine going third person, chef's kiss for me. If you're listening, I know he was recently.
He's listening.
I love David Halberstam, too. He's my favorite author. And anytime Sunshine wants to go third person, we're here for it.
Right.
We co-sign that.
We are. He's an IA Hall of Famer for a reason.
Damn Skippy.
Yeah. So Maryland wins at Indiana yesterday. 79-78 victory. They looked like they had the game won, then they gave it away, then they came back and took it. They go 2-0 on the road. And as the great Jimmy Patso says, you don't never apologize for road wins. So have we changed our expectations for Maryland basketball? They've now won three straight. They've won 5 of 6. They got a home game against a ranked opponent this week. How are we feeling about the Terps?
Well, I'm glad that Ben played that clip because that's where I'm back with third person Sunshine. This looked like a Sweet 16 team. This past week looked like a Sweet 16 team. It looked like a team that knew it had to stack some quad one wins quad one and quad two wins because seeding matters. And I think in a year where it looks like the dominant conferences are going to be afforded a lot of teams, that jockeying for position really matters. And I think if they're closer to a 4 than a 10, that's obviously going to help your chances of getting to the second weekend. And I think they found out a lot about themselves through this adversity. I think there's a confidence now about their ability to win when things get rough on the road. And some of the places in the tournament might be more hostile than not, again, depending on that seeding and where it is geographically speaking. But we've seen now on this road trip one game where the bigs absolutely dominated and another game where they dared them to shoot threes and they played a zone defense and they said, if you're lobbing the ball down low, it's going to come at a cost. And Maryland should have tried it a little more than they did, but basically didn't try it at all in the second half and still blew a lead, came back and won anyway on the road against a desperate Indiana team. So, yes, I'm bought back in.
I think so. You're proving you can win in a variety of ways. Would you like to see Derek Queen be more consistent? Sure. If Rodney Rice can pick his game back up, because prior to yesterday, he was shooting under 30% from three for the past month, that would be massive. And we know what Gillespie can do. And Reese has been really, really good lately. I saw the stat this morning. It's crazy. He's made 22 of his last 24 free throws.
That he doesn't even look fazed. Like, he looks like he'd be shocked now if he missed one.
Where he had the herky-jerk release in years past, for him to make 22 of his last 24 free throws, that's insane to think about.
And they're kind of line-drivey. They're kind of like Rice's threes. They're very more linear and line-drivey, but it's working.
Yeah, and now, guys, you've won 5 of 6. If you beat Wisconsin, you're going to be all alone in one of those top four spots in the Big Ten. You have to be feeling good about this Maryland team. And the other aspect of it is they're so balanced this year. Where are they as high with their defensive efficiency as last year? No, but they're still 24th, and they're a hell of a lot higher.
Way more
offensively.
Balanced.
20th in offensive efficiency. It's a really balanced team.
I feel like the one I don't know if it's disappointing, but I thought they were going to be a deeper team this year than they were a year ago. And I guess the starting five-wise, they're much deeper. They're not getting, and it's this stretch, I guess, but they're not getting a lot out of their bench these days. But man, oh man, they can beat you in so many different ways. And I feel like they can shoot for the first time in a long time, plus the two bigs, plus the way Juju's playing with so much confidence. And I do think Derek Queen, he's now was named Big Ten Freshman of the Week. I feel like this team has a legit chance to make some noise, get to the second weekend, and then you're like, okay, the chips fall where they may. I'm always an optimistic sucker when it comes to Maryland basketball in the first place, but I am now fully back bought in after what I saw this week.
And they look fully back bought in, and I'm not questioning commitment or any of that. It's just they look like a team that was starting to lose a little bit of their sense of identity. And I think they were wondering, what exactly are we? And I think their queen was very much looking like a freshman. And I think the coaching staff was figuring out, how much can we afford to pull them off the court? And how much do we have to keep playing the long game? And all this stuff was sort of happening at once. And now they've won three in a row, and winning is the ultimate elixir. And they did it in different ways. And I just feel like there's an exhale now about the course of their season that didn't exist even coming out of them surviving, because that's the proper verb, surviving Nebraska at home.
Something that may not seem like a big deal, but we heard that quote from Kevin Willard earlier in the show, and you mentioned it too, Jason. The energy that they've been playing with, not just on the court, but the bench as well. I mean, this team just seems to be playing with a ton of energy lately.
Terps are back in action Wednesday night. They host Wisconsin. It's a 7 o'clock tip, which means pregame coverage starts here on 105.7 The Fan at 6. Coming up next, we'll continue to talk Terps basketball. How good does Gene Wong think they are at this point? How far does he think they could go? He covers the Terps for the Washington Post. He joins us next. The Terps have won three in a row. They've won two straight on the road. They host Wisconsin on Wednesday. So just how good are they? Well, let's go out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline, where Gene Wong is now. And Gene covers the Terps for the Washington Post and joins us now. And Gene, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. So I guess let's start there. How good is this basketball team?
Well, they're starting to peak, and it's only midway through the Big Ten regular season schedule. They certainly have found their footing on the road after this Midwest swing. That was kind of their Achilles going into this week. But, I mean, they're a dangerous team because they can beat you any way you want to play. I mean, they can play fast. They can play slow. They can play a defensive game. They can try to, you know, put up 85, 90 points. So they got a lot of different ways to win games, as we saw this on this road trip against Illinois. You know, they went to the paint, and that's how they dominated. Against Indiana, they used their guards to score primarily. So they're a dangerous team because they have that kind of combination that can it's a matchup problem for a lot of different teams.
I know a lot can happen in a week, and these are young guys, and it's not hard to get things going in one way or another. But to think back to, like, the Nebraska game and almost giving away a 9-point lead at home, to then, to your point, finding one way to score 64 in the paint on the road at Illinois and then win behind the 3-point line yesterday at Indiana. How much confidence do you think they can take in this last week, now looking at three straight wins, versus if they blew that game to Nebraska, this might be, you know, time to throw chairs and season on the brink?
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And they had a 10-point lead late in the second half against Indiana, and they gave it away. But they found a way down the stretch to get it done. It was a great inbounds design by Coach Kevin Willard, and they got the hot shooter on the team, Riding Rice, the ball. Great look at the shot. And, you know, Kevin Willard has confidence in his shooters because he said he wanted to go for the win, and Rice was the guy to have the ball in his hands, either him or Jacoby Glass, either one of those two. But, yeah, I mean, a ton of confidence. Yeah, if the game goes a different way, we're maybe having a different conversation. But as it stands right now, hosting Wisconsin, then getting a break going into the stretch run of the Big Ten, if they can beat Wisconsin, they'll be sitting in a great position to have a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, which is so important given how rugged the Big Ten regular season grind is, to get a couple extra days of rest before that tournament is going to be so important going into March Madness too. So this Wisconsin game is huge, but I mean, they're in a great, great position.
Gene, we were just talking about Julian Reese prior to the break. He's made 22 of his last 24 free throws. I mean, it's crazy growth just even year over year, but even from the beginning. Yeah. But what have you seen from Julian his senior year, not just in terms of developing as a player, but also a leader on court?
Certainly, he's the unquestioned veteran leader, veteran presence in the locker room. He's seen it all, done it all. There's, you know, not much you can throw at him that he hasn't seen on the court defensively. But certainly, Kevin Willard leans on him a lot for leadership. Because, you know, in this day and age of one-and-done players and transfer portal and teams just overhauling their roster every season, Maryland has done the same thing. But Julian Reese has been that kind of steady presence the whole time. And that's just been invaluable to kind of keep this team together during the difficult times and to remind the players, look, we have a winning streak, but we haven't accomplished anything yet, right? There's still so much basketball in front of us. And when you talk to Julian Reese after a win or a loss, like, you don't know which is which because that's how kind of even-keeled he is. But certainly he's a, you know, Kevin Willard calls him a dog on the court. He really is. I mean, you don't, that guy plays as hard as anyone that Kevin Willard has coached, and he's coached a lot of great players, okay? So, you know what it's going to give you on the court, but in many ways, what he gives you off the court in the locker room, kind of that veteran presence, is almost in some ways more important because this is a very talented group of players. Apart from Julian Reese, we know how good Derek Queen is, right? He's going to be in the NBA next year. So, but not a lot of teams have that kind of veteran presence 4 years. I mean, you don't see that much these days in college basketball.
We're talking with Gene Wong. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Gene, I want to ask you about Jacoby Gillespie. And like, what were your expectations coming into the season? I'd assume he surpassed them. But, like, we heard great things. But coming from Belmont, I didn't expect this.
No disrespect at all to Belmont. But, you know, realistically, the level, the jump in talent level from that kind of program to Maryland and the Big Ten is huge, and he's almost had a seamless transition. I mean, last year the team was Jameer Young and everyone else kind of get out of the way.
Yeah.
This year, Jacoby Gillespie fits in perfectly because if he has to score, he can be that guy. If he has to have 9 assists, which he did the other day, he can be that guy too. So it's really been a perfect fit, a great addition. You know, everyone talks about Derek Queen, NBA talent. Certainly that guy's kind of the headline on the roster. But Jacoby Gillespie is kind of that engine that makes the team go. And he's just been such a pleasant surprise in terms of how easily he's transitioned from, you know, kind of a mid-major school to the highest level of competition in college basketball. And that guy's just a stone-cold killer from the three-point line. He's shooting 44% from three-point range, which is ridiculous. He has the ball in his hands all the time, obviously, as the point guard. But like, it's gotten to the point where whenever he puts a three-point shot up, especially if it's a step back that you expect to go in, he's had, and he can finish in the lane too. We've seen that time and again. You know, that overtime game against Northwestern, he got them to overtime, and he got them, you know, down the stretch. He tied it up late in the first overtime. I mean, he's a clutch player, and Kevin Willard is certainly, you know, beyond thrilled to have him.
Gene, this probably won't come up much Wednesday because this is kind of a one-off, and they've had a few days off, and then they don't play again for a while. But the depth and sort of a second, anything resembling a second rotation, is that something you think they may work on in this extended break after Wisconsin to figure out ways to get more people involved? Or because of the nature of this schedule, are they just going to ride the 7.5 guys they've got?
Yeah, see, that's a great question, and that's the one area where you look at Maryland and say, well, do they have a glaring weakness? It's the bench. They don't get a lot of points off the bench. They get some minutes off the bench, which is important to get rest. I mean, Deshaun Harris-Smith comes off the bench. Jay Young comes off the bench to give Jacoby Gillespie kind of a blow at point guard. Jafar Gapari has been really – at moments, he's been amazing.
Yes.
He gives them a little bit, you know, in the front court, but they're riding with the 7.5 guys that they have. And when you get to the NCAA tournament, you're not playing a rotation of 8 guys. I mean, you're playing your 6-7 best guys, and because, you know, there's no tomorrow. It's win or go home, right? So not that concerned about the bench. Certainly they would like to have more bench contributions if they can, but I think if that's the worst of their problems,
right,
they'll be fine going into March. They'll be fine going into March.
Gene, I guess just give us an early preview for Wednesday with a ranked Wisconsin team coming in. The students are back on campus. It's a gold rush. Right. It should be a heck of an atmosphere.
If that place isn't filled or close to filled, I mean, I don't know what else the Terrapins have to do to get the fan base more involved. I mean, coming off two great wins on the road, one over a ranked opponent, one, you know, in the closing seconds of a game at Raucous Assembly Hall. I mean, Maryland fans should be really, really pumped for what this team has shown they can do. I anticipate the student section will be filled with the students back from winter break. And, of course, we know how much energy and, you know, verve there can be in College Park when the basketball team is playing well. And if they don't fill it, it'd be a sad state. It'd be a sad state for affairs in College Park. But I expect it to be really packed. And for a game that means so much to Maryland, like we talked about earlier in the show, if they can win this game, they'll have the tiebreaker over every team that's kind of challenging for that number four slot besides Oregon. And they beat UCLA. That's one of the teams that's challenging. They have the tiebreaker over Illinois. They've beaten Indiana. They'll have beaten Wisconsin. So it's just a huge game on so many levels for the Terps.
Gene, let's finish sort of where we started, and that is, are you confident right now this is a team that I feel like unless they implode, they're going to make the tournament. But is this a team that you feel like can get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure they'll tell you the same thing. They feel like well beyond the second week. I mean, you figure with the firepower they have in the front court, I don't know many front courts in the country that can hang with Julian Reese and Derek Queen if they're playing at their best. And they have a rotation of three guards who they don't all have to be on. Let's say Ryan Rice is not shooting well. You still have Jacoby Gillespie. And lest we forget, Selton Miguel, who's made seven or eight threes in a game this year. He had three threes in the second half against Indiana. He can get hot too. So they have among their starting five, to me, as good as any starting five in the Big Ten. And Kevin Will, we know, knows how to coach. I think they can really make some noise in the NCAA tournament this season.
Gene Wong covers the Terps for the Washington Post. Gene, this was great. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it, fellas. Anytime. Hope to talk soon.
Thanks so much. Hey, coming up next, we get some Ravens talk in here, and the season is over. We're looking ahead. Are we buying any of the Ravens' young pass rushers? The young ones. We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
In, Chiefs just picked him up. The pressure's on Mahomes, and he is stopped. David Ojabo, it's been a long time for Ojabo.
Moss the back. Chase on the move. Burrow to the air. They come up the middle with Robinson. How about that? Tavius Robinson coming through, blowing up the play, getting the sack.
I've had a torn ACL, and anybody that's ever had one knows it takes time to come back. But he's out there fighting. He's out there scraping. And I just think that if he continues the way he's going, he's going to, you know, have success because he knows how to – he's got moves. Now we just got to, you know, give him the opportunity.
So the highlights from NBC and CBS, David Ojabo and Tavius Robinson with sacks, and then Chuck Smith talking about Ojabo and recovery from injuries. And we bring this up because, obviously, the Ravens were second in the NFL in sacks, but what are they getting from the young guys? And Tavius Robinson flashed a lot in that final playoff game. It was more against the run than rushing the passer. And let's face it, David Ojabo has, for the most part, not given them much. So are you buying the young pass rushers on this football team?
I'm buying their need to supplement this group significantly. What does the future hold for Owe? What's his price point? What are you really going to commit to there? I think Ojabo, you've got to be willing to accept, could be a complete sunk cost. I think Robinson is an interesting player with an interesting body type.
I like him. Good motor.
Good rotation guy. I don't think you're ever going to look at him as somebody you're counting on for pass rush, as a natural pass rusher or someone you think's going to be a third down force for you. And, I mean, Kyle Van Noy, at some point, Father Time's going to win. I think it's quite possibly the biggest need on the football team. It's up there for me. I've been kind of breaking the roster down. I've started looking at free agent list and where, we know, you're always kind of looking where supply and demand is and where their needs are met by the market or met by the draft. I think they need to take considerable swings on pass rush, on the ability to close out a game. And maybe with some guys who have to attract a little more attention on the edge, maybe that opens things up for Madubuike a little bit. Or maybe they get back, you know, to some of the push we saw from their D tackles a year ago. I think it would be a mistake to just bank on player development with this group.
Well, we talked during a TMI last week how the future of this position beyond 2025 is murky at best. They just don't really have anyone under contract moving forward. And for me, David Ajabo's got to earn a spot on this team. He is not entering training camp where he's a lock on this roster. He's going to have to earn his way through camp, through preseason. Adiza Isaac, it was a lost year for him. He was pretty much just a redshirt year. Owe is what he is. And he's a fine player. He's a good football player. But they need to inject some youth into this group and some talent. They've only invested, what was it, since 2018, I want to say, two top two round picks, and that was Ajabo and Owe since 2018.
The guy who was supposed to be sudden and a thing and polished was Ajabo.
Yes. Remember Chuck Smith? He's like,
there's nothing sudden about Owe. No. Like, Owe gets pliable enough to do one dip move 5 years into his career, and I'm losing my breath over it, going crazy and creating entire segments out of it because it's like, I saw that. That was special. But like, he's a try-hard guy. He's stiff. He's not there's nothing twitchy really about him. He doesn't have the get-off that you'd like to have with somebody who you think is an elite developmental pass rusher. I think they need, and it's hard, look, when you're picking 25th every year and you don't want to spend money on it in free agency, it's tough. But, I mean, and we've talked about Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack might end up being way more expensive than they're willing to do.
Sure.
Like that might be a whole
different... But that seemed to be their wheelhouse.
But I think when you start stacking up this group of free agents, I think he might outclass them. But like the Fowler Jr. kid who finally had the light bulb go off in Washington? Or like, can you get Hassan Reddick cheap enough? Like, I just think they need a different sort of thing in that room.
I also think it should be fair, and I don't think this is going to happen again, but going into last season, we thought pass rush was a need, and they finished second in the league in sacks somehow. Yeah.
But is there anybody that you have to double with the game on the line?
You don't. And maybe Madubuike.
I'm trying to think of the highest level here because they've got to unseat a dynasty to even get to a Super Bowl. And so, like, is that D-line going to be able to beat Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead? Especially if they go get a real left tackle next year and they move Tooney back inside. Like, who's winning those battles? Van Noy at age 30, whatever?
No.
They got to go out and add here. There's no fans. You have 11 picks as well, and you brought up that last week, Jason. I mean, if there was a year where maybe you package some of them to make it, obviously the premier pass rush guys go very, very early on, but if you can move up a little bit.
I like the kid from Ohio State, Jason. I told you. Sawyer?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I got to get through free agency first. I don't know.
I don't think he's going high.
We'll see. And it's not to say that second, third round picks don't pan out or that they all have to be super high. I mean, that Van Ginkle kid wasn't picked crazy high. Like, you can find him, you know. But I think they need different element, a more of a speed, more of a twitch, someone who's been there, done that. I don't know.
Coming up next, the offseason is here for the Washington Commanders as well. We talked to our buddy. We'll get some Ravens in there as well. Cordell Woodland, how's he feeling the day after the NFC Championship game? He joins us next here on The Fan.